a passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver. Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Time, where we're changing the world, wait for it, one Om at a time. Here on the first Monday, I don't know why I think it's Monday. On the first Thursday of October, we have our regular first Thursday of the month special guest or co-host, really. I don't even consider you a guest anymore. You're really kind of a co-host. We've been doing this segment. I don't know how long we've been doing this segment, this first of the month, but it's been a while. So, anyways, Matt Connerton from Matt Connerton Unleashed. And he's going to bring us all of the wit, wisdom, and wily ways of politics into the Dr. Kevin Show, as he does once a month, so that we can, kick it around a little bit here for the Dr. Kevin audience. So, Matt, what's been up? How are you doing?
Oh, doing well. I'm excited that in a couple of weeks, maybe a little more than a couple of weeks, on the 26th, I'll be, which happens to be my birthday, I'll be going to get my booster shot of Pfizer, and I assume you're scheduled for yours as well.
My first round was Moderna, so I don't think they're doing boosters for the Moderna people.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, you're right. You're right. At least not yet, but, hopefully it's coming.
Yep. Jeff got his third. Of course,
okay.
They made a mistake with him. And of
really?
Course, he was very early on in getting his because of his health issues and because he is an essential worker.
Yeah.
So the combination, he was first in line for the vaccine practically. And the first round, they gave him a Pfizer, and the second round, they gave him a Moderna.
Oh, okay.
But he was eligible to get the third one. Now, everything I've read or poked around at said that they actually think that there is some benefit to getting the combination of the two. So I would happily get a Pfizer booster on top of a, Moderna original cocktail. I don't think it's going to hurt. If anything, it might prove to be more successful. Thoughts?
Yeah, my understanding, just from what I've read, is that probably will be the conclusion, is that you can mix and match and that it doesn't really matter. But they seem to be being very cautious about that so far. In terms of sort of putting that conclusion into stone, there's a lot of talk about how it's probably fine to mix and match, and it shouldn't certainly have any adverse effects. But it seems like they want to be really, really sure on that one point. But we'll see. But yeah, so it probably, Jeff obviously didn't have any, it didn't cause any problem for him getting Pfizer and then Moderna. So, so he'll be getting his third soon.
No, he already got his third.
Oh, he already got his third. I gotcha. Okay. Okay. Good.
Yep.
Good.
Yeah. No, he got his third the end of last week, I think. And he didn't have any side effects at all. He, just
yeah.
kept right on going. He hit the ground running.
I got not too long ago. I don't remember if this was before the last our last show together, but I also got my pneumonia vaccine, which really surprised me when my doctor suggested it to me, because that's for 65 and over. Typically, I'm in my 40s, And it's funny too. I was there for a physical, and in that very same appointment, he told me that health-wise, I'm still a very young man, which was wonderful to hear. But then in the same appointment, he says, we need to get you vaccinated for pneumonia. And I'm like, what? But that's for people much older. And you just told me health-wise, I'm very young. But he said, because of my asthma, he says, any patients who have asthma, he recommends that they get the pneumonia vaccine. So I got vaccinated for that. And I had very similar side effects to what I had with the two shots of Pfizer, where it just wiped me out. I got very, very tired, you know, just for a day. But, you know, certainly worth it. As someone with asthma, I certainly don't need fluid in my lungs.
No, not unless it's a good quality liquor.
Well, I don't want that in my lungs regardless.
Well,
yikes.
waving at your lungs as it goes down.
Yeah, there you go. It can wave.
There you go. It can wave. Yeah. I didn't have a lot of the, I mean, I think I shared this once before, like when I had my first vaccine, I was hyper until I crashed. I was hyper from like Friday afternoon when I got it until Saturday night. And like Saturday night, like 10 o'clock, I was like, we were watching something. I stood up at the chair, I looked at Jeff and I said, I'm done. And I walked in, fell into bed, and I was in bed all day Sunday. By Monday, I was fine.
Yeah.
I was just tired. And second one, nothing.
Yeah.
Didn't have anything.
That's all it did to me, was just made me very tired. But in my case, the second one was actually more severe than the first one, which seems to be the case for a lot of people. It's the second one that knocks them down. But the pneumonia vaccine knocked me down much harder than either of the Pfizer shots. That day I got the shot at, I think, about around 9 a.m. And I came in to do my show here at WMNH that day. And I remember I sit down to do the show, and all of a sudden I'm like so tired, and it took me a minute to even think about, why am I so tired? So tired that I was actually struggling to get through my show. And that's never happened. I mean, I've shown up, you know, exhausted before, but I was struggling just to get to 6 o'clock. And, you know, and I realized during the course of that, I was like, oh, it was that damn vaccine, you know. And then I went home and went right to bed, and I think I slept for 12 hours. But, you know, had to be done. And, you know, here I am believing in science, so I don't mind a bit. I'm one of these believe in science people here in the United States of anti-science. Thank God we live in the Northeast. I love the Northeast. Seriously.
Well, now, Matt, I just want you to know that from the perspective of the universe, that the universe wanted to give you the experience that sometimes your listeners go through, which is they didn't think 6 o'clock would ever come.
See what you did there.
Yeah. Hey,
yeah.
You know, speaking about things that make me tired. Mm. Well, there are two things. There are two or three things that make me tired. One thing that's making me tired these days is the amount of ghosting irresponsibility when you're trying to get people to do work for you. Like, you know, like I have an issue with part of my over my kitchen. I have a rubber roof because that was an add-on that was done well before we bought the house, but it doesn't have the same roof as the original house. And it's got, and they put a rubber roof on it, for which I will curse them to eternity for, and, or whoever put it on, whatever. And it's caused lots of problems. And I reach out to somebody who advertises they take care of this stuff. They ask me for my address. They're local. blah, 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 and then suddenly stop responding to my text. I never hear from them. They disappear. I have somebody that's supposed to be coming and helping me do fall cleanup because I'm still having that, you know, I still have the frozen shoulder, and so it kind of limits what I can do.
Oh, and, wow, still.
Oh, yeah. They're saying a year for this thing before it will be back to normal.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of cramping my style a little bit, but in the way in which I do so well, I push right through.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know me, Matt.
Yes. Yes, so, of course.
Yeah. But somebody says that they're looking, you know, some high school kid says they're looking to, you know, that they've done a lot of, you know, landscaping and gardening, and they're looking for money for college. I'm like, hey, I'm happy to pay you. Come do some. Go back and forth, then ghost me. And, yeah, I'm just like, what is this today with people from somebody who owns their own business ghosting me to somebody who needs money for college? I mean, I'm like, what happened to, if you decide you can't do it for some reason, you say, I'm sorry, I realize it's not going to fit in my schedule. Or, I mean, like, doesn't anybody think that maybe there may come the day when I might need more work and they show up and I'll go, you're the one that ghosted me, right? Yeah, I'm not interested in working with you. I'm sure I can find somebody else. I mean, do people not have that concept? Do you ever have this problem, or is it just me?
I mean, I haven't had that specific problem necessarily, but I notice, you know, I've been complaining about it for years and years. And by the way, this is why I personally don't support the, and this will surprise some people to hear me say this because everyone thinks I'm so liberal. I don't support the Fight for 15 movement. And what you're describing is part of what I see as a broader issue in that, it is far, far too easy to go out into the world on a daily basis and find yourself interacting with people who have no damn work ethic at all. And it's like, you know, it's incredible. And by the way, I don't, lest anyone think I sound like a cranky old man when I say that, I recognize it's always been that way. Cause you know, some people will say, oh, you know, these kids today, they're so lazy. But when I was growing up, everybody worked hard. To that, I say BS. I mean, you know, when I was, in high school, I worked with people, you know, I had part-time jobs and, you know, I'd work with people older than me, and some of them had a very good work ethic and took their jobs very seriously. And some of them were lazy. You know, there's hardworking people and lazy people in every generation of every age and so forth. But there's a lot of lazy people out there. That's why, you know, it's an old cliche, but it is true. You know, good help is hard to find. You know, that expression has been around forever. Probably before you or I were even born, people were saying that because it's true. It says a lot of people are lazy. And I think just what you're experiencing is, you know, it's the nature of humans. So there's a lot of just lazy people who don't care. Not only do they lack work ethic, but they don't care about their own reputations. You know, and they don't care about other people enough to want to follow up or even like you said, just show the common courtesy to say, hey, looks like I'm not going to be able to do this job after all. I'm sorry. You know, they don't even do that. They just don't care. There's a lot of people. I you know, the American work ethic, sometimes I wonder, is it all just a myth? Because it's just so many people who don't have any work ethic or professionalism, and they're everywhere. And it's incredible. It really is.
Yep. And, you know, it has always existed. You know, I clearly remember, you know, as they were collapsing under the weight of the big old stones they were moving, Cleo sort of turning to me and saying, good help is hard to find. And he's like, how slow it's taken her to build those pyramids. But it has always been some, but I'm less I more often, my experience has been, and maybe I've just been lucky, that if I'm going to find lazy, unmotivated people, they usually work for somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, they have some entry-level job somewhere or some job where they've just held on forever, or, you know. And I'm going to say this, and this is an old cliche, and it's not completely true, but there is some truth to it. Or they go work for the government.
yeah.
You know, or, you know, I you said you're not for the whole, for 15, what'd you say, call it?
Movement? Fight for 15, yeah.
Oh, fight yeah. for 15. I think you said 5 for 15. And I'm like, well, I'll give you 5 if you give me 15 back. I mean, that's possible. I struggle. I mean, I have my struggles and have always had my struggles with too much unionization, too much power mm-hmm. in unions. And, mm-hmm. You know, and some of the things go on when you get into jobs where you have to practically kill somebody to get fired because they tie it up and make it so difficult that, you know, people who have a good work ethic and fight hard, I get that, you know, I get the pros and cons of things like unions, but I'm not a mm-hmm. solid, like, I'm a union guy at all. I think that that they can be just as bad. Now, did you hear about them raiding the New York City police officers' union headquarters?
No, this got by me. I did not hear about this.
I haven't got any more details except for that the FBI raided one of the New York City police officers' union's headquarters. They raided it. They seized all sorts of stuff. And the guy who was the president of the union of that particular sect, I don't know if it was all, probably wasn't the whole city. It was probably one of the boroughs, I suspect. I didn't get a chance to read the whole thing, but it was a developing story when I saw it. But the guy that was the president, resigned almost immediately afterwards. So something's up.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll be right back, and we're going to talk about other things that make us tired, like politics. That always makes me tired. Here with Matt Connerton on the Dr. Kevin Show.
Conscious media for conscious minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Time. Remember, we are a live call-in show. I remembered that just as this segment started, since I didn't say it in the first segment. I'm like, oh, yeah, right. 202-570-7057. You can call in at 202-570-7057 and join the conversation. Be part of the talk. Our guest or my co-host for this week is Matt Connerton from Matt Connerton Unleashed, who has a drive-by. I've gone back to drive-by, Matt. A drive-by radio show. You can drive by it and wave on him on Elm Street in Manchester at WMNH 97.5, or you can go to mattconnerton.com or the other website is ipmnation.com. And from 4 to 6, Monday through Friday, you can hear the show, you can interact with his show, and you can see what's going on. And, well, you know, I kind of pinhole you because you talk a lot of politics, but you talk a lot of other stuff, too. I mean, you don't save your smack. You don't save the smack you talk just for politics. You smack other places.
An odd way of putting it, but yes, that is true.
But Matt, you come and visit me once a month because you can only take me once a month because you like the oddity and odd ways in which I put things, right? Isn't that part of my attraction?
Absolutely. Yes, of course.
There you go. We never know what's coming out of my mouth. So before we move into politics, is there anything else going on in the world that's irritating you these days or that you would like to report makes you joyfully happy?
Oh, boy. Well, that's a very broad question.
Consider it a question from an old broad.
Yeah, you know, politics makes me happy. I mean, it frustrates me, but it makes me happy.
Okay. Well, so I am going to, so I am in the throes myself of teaching my self-mastery through astrology course. And so once a month for the next 6 months, which is the part one of the course. And then if people want to get more advanced, we go forward. So, but that's, you know, that's 6 9-hour days. So, I mean, there's a lot of information pumping in there.
Yeah.
And,
wow.
Teaching them some critical skills, critical thinking ways to think about astrology and how it applies in their life. But I love how this always happens, Matt, because, you know, I was teaching the Master Tarot class and that one went for 23 9-hour classes.
Wow.
Ended up being what that Master Tarot class was. And I love teaching the master classes because I get to dive into it deep. You only have people that really are serious, and they all know that if they're coming to work with me, that we're going to be doing a lot of, this is how it applies into your life. How do we apply this into your life? How do we make it something that's tangible for you? But as always, because I don't do that many chart readings. People don't think of me traditionally as an astrologer. I don't put myself out as an astrologer, but I mean, I started learning astrology in 77, I think. So it's not like it hasn't been, part of me for a long time. But, what's happened is as I dive into it, because I dive into it all over again. So
yeah.
I will, even though I have all of the notes and all of the handouts, once I decided I was going to teach this class, I went out there and found 10 other, you know, books I hadn't read yet or podcasts I could listen to or things I could do to see if anybody out there was saying anything that I had never heard or thought of before to redo it all over again.
And
the thing is, I probably could have taught this class. I know I could have taught this class and never done any of that, but it's not good enough for me. It's like you were saying, I love politics. It's like right now I'm having a mad passionate love affair with astrology. And I had a mad passionate, my last mad passionate love affair with astrology was in 97. That was the last time I taught it. And, you know, and while I was teaching the tarot, I had a mad passionate love with the tarot and started doing my own, making my own tarot deck and did the outline for a tarot book. And I don't know where the astrology is going to leave me, but it's like this whole immersion thing. So that's kind of, besides my clients and, you know, all the other stuff, that's kind of been my bell ring these days. And of course, now I'm getting people that want me to do with their astrology charts, even if they don't know I'm teaching an astrology course. Suddenly they are like, oh, you do astrology? Could you do my chart? I'd like to have you do my chart, because they know me from some other faith and they know that I'm always going to bring it the Dr. Kevin twist. You know, so
I'm curious about something. So these courses, does everyone make it through, or do you have some people who aren't able to finish? Because it sounds like it's pretty intensive. And I wonder if there's some people who kind of fall out because they just they can't get through it all.
I lost one person in the tarot course.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a third of the way through the first of the astrology course, and I haven't lost anybody, and everybody is still pretty gung-ho committed. And some of them have already said to me that they're going to sign up for the next installment of classes to take it to the next level afterwards.
Well, that's good. Good.
So, yeah. I mean, and I've had a few people say, when are you going to do that tarot course again? I'm like, are you sure you got what it takes to take it?
Well, yeah, because I would imagine there's some people who are interested in it, who, you know, think it's going to be something much simpler than it is. You know what I mean?
Well, and I try to warn people. I come with a warning label is what I try to tell people. I'm always very upfront about it. When I say this is a mastery class, we're diving in deep. Your crap is going to come up in the process. We're going to be learning this as a lens with which to, for you to analyze your life.
Yeah.
And I would say that the people that go through mastery classes would tell you that, that not only did they learn a subject, but their life is changed on the other side.
Yeah.
And so that's why I don't do a lot of these classes, because a lot of people just want down dirty fast. Can you just give me the McDonald's version of the planets and the Burger King version of the signs? And can you do the Wendy's version of the houses? And then I can glut myself in fast food and tell everybody I know astrology.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. I mean, I would think there'd be some people who you must have a way of screening those people out, right? You know, if you have a conversation with them where you explain this is really intensive and it's not going to be a fast food type of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
They know like these people all committed to 6-9 hour classes from the get go.
Yeah,
I was clear all along, this is only going to take you to a point, but it's going to take you to a point to see how deeply you want to dive into it. And the last few classes, I'm going to be teaching you astrology through your own chart. So we're going to be taking apart the charts of everybody in the class to apply the information now I've given it to you to help you develop the critical thinking skills that are the critical thinking skills that can help you take advantage of astrology.
Yeah.
And that's just not the way, you don't find many teachers that teach that way, but this is like the only way I like to teach. So anyways, I guess we should move on to politics now, but I wanted to find out if there's anything in your world and I wanted to share what was going on in mine. And you know, and we are in a Mercury retrograde. But what's been the hot political topics going on in Matt's world? What's been going on in Matt Connerton Unleashed?
Well, you know, I've been talking a lot about the debt ceiling, and I was very glad that Mitch McConnell has blinked. So, I mean, you know, it buys us a little time on this. So the debt limit will be raised. That is an issue that I'm very passionate about. And when I think back to, you know, Matt Connerton Unleashed has been around for just a little over 10 years and change. And I've been at WMNH on FM radio for, it will be 5 years in April. So, you know, about 4.5 years now, but I started it as a, you know, just a weekly 1 hour podcast. And when I started the show in the summer of 2011, the first big subject that I would really tackle and rant and rave about was the debt ceiling or the debt limit or the fiscal cliff or whatever you want to call it. There's different terms for it, and why it was so important. And I remember being very upset. At the time, it was during the Obama administration, and John Boehner was Speaker of the House at the time, and he had infamously said that the debt limit might very well be a hostage worth taking, meaning that he was willing to put that on the table as a negotiating point. And I did not realize exactly what the debt limit was at the time. But when I learned about it, because, you know, it had been a non-issue in previous administrations, it had just been a perfunctory thing that, you know, when it's time to raise the debt limit, you raise the debt limit so the United States can continue to borrow money to pay on the debt. Because if you don't do that, you know, I liken it to, it's like a car payment. You know, if you buy a car, you finance a car, you know, that's money that you've spent and you have to pay on that debt every month. And if you fail to pay on that debt every month and you go into default, you know, eventually you're going to wake up to an empty driveway. And, you know, but what I realized at the time was back in 2011 is, you know, we had all these Republicans, we had the Tea Party, these Tea Party Republicans, and the Tea Partiers proved themselves to be incredibly dangerous and reckless because their position was that, no, you should not raise the debt limit and that we should allow the country to default because we're spending too much money. And what I began to realize very quickly, and of course, these people are still around now. They've since been rebranded as the House Freedom Caucus. But what I began to realize very quickly is these people don't understand what the debt limit is. We have people who are going to take us over the fiscal cliff because they don't understand. They literally, people we've elected to the U.S. Congress making these decisions don't even understand what they're talking about. Because I would see them on these cable news shows talking about how, you know, we need to spend less, because they didn't understand that the debt limit is not the same thing as the federal budget. If you want to cut spending, you have to cut the budget. But the debt limit is just what allows us to continue to borrow money to pay on, you know, these debts that we've already committed to, money that's already been spent. And it was very frustrating to me that had become a point of contention at the time, and that we might actually, for the first time in the history of the country, default on our debt. And the more I learned about it, you know, I read everything about it that I could and began to realize how catastrophic that would be for the country, and not only for the United States economy, but for the global economy, to go into default. And here we are 10 years later. There's still people who don't understand the difference between the budget and the debt limit. There's still people voting in Congress who don't understand the difference, or they're willfully ignorant to it. And, you know, and all the stress that built up inside of me 10 years ago about, oh my God, might we actually go into default? You know, here we are again, still dealing with this. So, and I'm continuing on my show, you know, people call the show, they say things like, Matt, don't you think we spend too much money? And I have to explain to them very patiently, well, if you think we spend too much money, then we need to address that in the federal budget, not the debt limit. That's not something to play with. So that's been probably the single biggest political topic on my show.
Well, and what's interesting is when, after the Civil War, part of the, you know, part of the scare to have the Civil War even happen was if you started counting black people as real people, then they would get votes. And they could actually vote themselves into Congress, and they could actually might have power, and that they were ignorant and undereducated, and that they had no business in, I mean, and this was the whole thing through the last half of the 1800s. You know, that this pushback was saying it's dangerous to give uneducated people the right to vote or to be elected to office. And that same card was played against Asian Americans and didn't actually play itself out until 1965. That's within my lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, like up until 65, there were still limits on how many Asian people could immigrate to this country because they would change the demographics of the country in a negative way. We had laws on the books that didn't get turned over to 65, not that long ago. And
right.
This whole thing. And now what we've done is we're seeing the proof of the fact that you should not actually put people in positions of voting power who are dumb and ignorant and don't understand what they're voting on. And they're all white, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep, yep. We have people that are ill-educated, ill-informed, and in some cases really not all that bright, but they can still manage to be charismatic to the people that are in fear that they're going to lose their country if they don't hold on to the basic core principles of white supremacy until their fingernails drag out of their fingers.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing the evidence of that now. And there's never been a test. I mean, I would bet you serious money that there are a number of those people in the House of Representatives and even in the Senate who, if they had to take the test that people have to take to get citizenship today to be part of this country, they would flunk it.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
But the question is, and we'll talk about it when you get back, should there be some filter to getting elected? Is it time to put something in place? And what would that look like? And we'll be right back here on the Dr. Kevin Show.
The Real Conscious Connection. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Vox Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Join me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio for Vox Novus, the new voice.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
So, Matt, what do you think? Now, don't start it with, it's never going to happen. Don't pull a Matt on me.
Okay, but blinders. You know that's what I'm
okay.
thinking.
I know that's what you're thinking. I don't even have to be psychic to know that's what you're thinking. I have historical evidence with you.
That's right.
I just need a memory, a good memory. That's all.
Yes. Yes.
Is it time to put something in place? I mean,
what would you put in place?
I don't know. Should a candidate have to pass a test that proves a basic understanding of the government, the Constitution, and how our laws work? And if they can't pass the test, they can't be a candidate.
I think it's a great idea in principle, in theory, but then you'd have people arguing about, well, what should be on the test, what the criteria should be. And I do think it might be somewhat undemocratic if you're putting in some sort of a test like that. Ultimately, voters have to be able to decide. I don't think it would ever happen, but I also don't think there's a way to practically and pragmatically do that. I just don't see a way to do it that would be effective, I think. I think you have to give, you know, I mean, it is a democracy. If you want, if Americans want to elect stupid people, and, you know, we live in the United States of anti-science where, you know, in particularly in certain regions of the country, that is what people want. You've got a lot of stupid people who I think want stupid people to represent them. I mean, look at the anti-intellectualism that goes on, and that's not anything new, but, you know, some of these people, they look at, I mean, I remember just as a random example in 2004, you know, one of the knocks against John Kerry was, he went to, I forget what school he went to. Was it Harvard? He went to one of the Ivy League schools. Oh, he's so smart. He's one of them intellectuals, you know, and the word intellectual actually became a pejorative among conservatives. You know, they try to discourage intellectualism. They try to discourage higher education. It's like they think it's noble to be stupid, and then they elect stupid people. I don't know that there's any way to do that. I don't know, to prevent that rather. And it's unfortunate, but there's very much an anti-intellectualism and an anti-education bias that exists, in the red states. But they have a right to elect who they want to.
Well, in one case, of course, Mitch McConnell's not stupid.
No, absolutely not.
And there are key members of the GOP that know they would never stay in power if they promoted their voters to get educated because they'd never vote for them.
Right. Of course.
You know, they They basically, they treat their voters like rubes in a carnival.
But oh, yeah. The thing is, absolutely.
Until the rube knows it, that they're being a rube, there's nothing you can do. Because,
right.
You know, we're dealing with a lot of scared people. So let's bring this around to, why do you think Mitch blinked? Because you know what his end game was to make them use their one golden ticket for reconciliation on this, so they couldn't use it on the infrastructure budget.
Yeah, well, I think McConnell may have made a calculation that in the court of public opinion, the Democrats were winning the battle rhetorically in terms of blaming the Republicans on default. I mean, McConnell knows, obviously, and he's said it publicly before. He understands the importance of raising the debt limit. And I think the Democrats were winning the war of public opinion on that the Republicans were the ones risking the economy. So I think that's why he blinked. I don't think he wants, I mean, honestly, I said on my show, and I hate to think of something so sinister, but Mitch McConnell, I think, would be capable of this. You know, I wondered if the Democrats wanted the country, I mean, if the Republicans rather wanted the country to default because they knew, because McConnell certainly knows, the consequence of that and how damaging it would be to the American economy. And then, you know, because the American public tends to have a very reductive way of looking at the economy, and they tend to assign the chief executive, in my opinion, far, far, far too much credit and or blame for how the economy is performing. So I think there would be a case to be made among Republicans that they could force the economy to collapse under a debt limit default, and that way Americans would largely blame Joe Biden, and then that would give Republicans an advantage in 2022 and in 2024. But I think, and I'm sure McConnell, that had to have occurred to him, but I think at the end of the day he concluded it was that was too much of a risk, because then you know, what if Democrats were able to convince the American people that, no, this is the Republicans' fault? So I think that's why he blinked. I think he thought it was too much of a risk to take. But I want to see the debt limit go away completely. And we're starting to hear some calls for that. You know, just get rid of the debt limit. It's, you know, it shouldn't be this noose around our necks that continues to exist. By the way, too, I will say something, and I don't do this often. I'll say one nice thing about Mitch McConnell. I know I've said this on my show. I'm not sure if I've said it on yours, Dr. Kevin, but for all of his faults and for all of his evil, and I do believe him to be fundamentally evil, Mitch McConnell is very pro-vaccine and has actually taken out ads in Kentucky that he's paid for, trying to get his fellow Kentuckians to get vaccinated. McConnell is himself a polio survivor, so he understands the importance of vaccines and the importance of medical science and the dangers of this pandemic. So I applaud what he's doing in Kentucky, trying to convince people to get vaccinated. So, you know, I will say something nice about him. You know what they say, though, about a blind dog. There you go. Something nice about Mitch McConnell.
What do they say about a blind dog, Matt?
Even a blind dog gets a bone once in a while.
Ah, there you go. Mm-hmm. So, what do you think about our own little state brouhaha that made the guy, the Republican in New Hampshire, step down because he was caught spreading false information about the vax and the COVID through the budget stuff? And not only did the Democrats ask him to step down, but Sununu asked him to step down, and the guy stepped down. The rep from Kingston. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I can't remember his name either.
That?
A little bit. I mean, I'm glad Sununu asked him to step down. I have a lot of problems with Governor Sununu, Governor Chris Sununu of New Hampshire, but I'll tell you what, he is the one Republican that I voted for in the 2020 election. The way the Republican Party is going, he may very well be the last Republican I ever vote for. But the reason I voted for Chris Sununu is I felt that he has done an excellent job as far as COVID. He is pro-vaccine. He is very pro-science. He has infuriated the base of his own party by taking COVID seriously, because as you know, from being in New Hampshire, we have a lot of Republicans here in New Hampshire who still think it's all a hoax and all this. Some of them who I used to be friends with, who don't really talk to me anymore because I'm on my show every day talking about how stupid these people are. But you know, Chris Sununu has really had to stand up to his own party in a lot of ways on this, and I credit him for that. I have some other issues with him, and disappointments and frustrations and so forth. But he's been right on COVID. I would say the same. By the way, you know, Charlie Baker, the governor of Massachusetts, another Republican, who has, despite his party affiliation, who has insisted on taking COVID very seriously, and I think has done an excellent job. And he's got a lot of people in his own party. Again, he's a Republican governor, so he's got a lot of people in his own state, Republicans, who are upset with him. But he has held the line, and he has not given in to those people, and I think that's great. And I just wish I could say that about the Republican Party in a macro sense, but they're very anti-science.
Well, Larry Hogan, Republican governor of Maryland.
Another good Republican who has taken COVID seriously.
You know, you have those that are trying to run on more of the old Republican principles. So Sununu seems like he's been sliding a little lately because he's positioning himself. Larry Hogan was another one that was like not going to take shit from anybody anywhere. He was going to do what was right for his state.
Absolutely. And part of that is just, I think, a product of the Northeast. Again, I'm not kidding when I say thank God we're in the Northeast, because this is the most highly educated region of the country. And this is the region that's done the best with COVID. And part of it is, you know, even Republicans here, you know, I mean, again, we've got a lot of yahoos, but the ones that managed to get to become the chief executives of their states, they believe in science and they take COVID seriously. And I think it's a product of in this part of the country, you know, we don't have people like Greg Abbott who, I mean, we have Republicans like Greg Abbott, but not, you know, Greg Abbott would never survive as a governor of New Hampshire or of Massachusetts or of Maryland. He would never have the kind of success that he's had in Texas in this part of the country, being that kind of Republican. I guess what I'm saying is not to sound elitist, but our Republicans in the Northeast are much smarter than the rest of the Republicans across the country.
Yeah, well, it's not stopping them from trying to pull some gerrymandering, though.
Of course.
The fires and flames continue to seem to crank up under the rump roast of the former president, who shall remain nameless. Do you think, I mean, there seems to be one loss after another of, no, you can be held accountable. No, you can be sued. No, you certainly, I think it's so funny that he thought he could pull executive privilege as a former president and say, you can't subpoena my people. Executive privilege. It's like, you're not the executive anymore. You lost that privilege. Remember, there was an election. You lost. But yeah, I think he really thought he could.
It doesn't, well, but he probably still can, in the sense that, as we learned over the course of the Trump administration, it doesn't matter if it's a congressional subpoena. Apparently, and we all know this now, I don't know if it had ever been tested before, but if you're subpoenaed to testify in front of Congress, you can just ignore it and there's no consequence. Nobody comes and arrests you. Nothing happens. You can just ignore a congressional subpoena, and Congress shrugs and says, oh, okay. I mean, so he probably can still continue to claim executive privilege, and it won't matter. There's nobody has the balls for some reason to hold any of these people accountable for ignoring these subpoenas. It's very strange. But that's where we are.
Matt, fun as always. I look forward to having you back in another month and see how much more into the handbasket of hell the country has gone.
Yes.
You have a good month.
Thank you.
Give my love to Jenny.
I will. Thank you, Dr. Kevin. Bye, everybody.